Hello again, I'm Armin Alney. After 40 years in Washington, Los Angeles Democrat Henry Waxman has resigned from his 33rd congressional district, and the line to replace him is growing. The registration is 44% Democratic, 27% Republican, and 24% Independent. Tonight we'll hear from two prominent Democrats who want the job, State Senator Ted Lieu and former L.A. City Controller Wendy Gruhl. The district is anchored on the Palos Verdes Peninsula. It includes parts of Beverly Hills and surrounding parts of Los Angeles, all the way to Agoura Hills and Calabasas. Senator Ted Lieu is a lawyer. He served in the U.S. Air Force, and he was elected to the State Assembly in 2005. He's now chosen to run for Congress instead of standing for re-election to the State Senate. Senator, good to have you on our program.
Thank you, Warren. Honored to be on your show.
Re-election to the State Senate might have been an easy task for you. Now you're running against Wendy Gruhl, a very prominent Democrat who's very well known in the city of Los Angeles. A lot of the district is in the city. What makes you think you can beat her?
Actually, a lot of the district isn't the city of Los Angeles. It's independent cities, South Bay, West Side. And in my State Senate district, I've represented 86% of the congressional district. And when I was in assembly, my assembly district was nearly half the congressional district. So I have a very strong base of support in the district. And as you know, Wendy does not live in a district. She said she's going to move in.
She has some prominent endorsements, including the Attorney General of the state, Rob Reiner, a very well-known person. She, of course, spent time at DreamWorks before she became a politician.
Yes, and I honor the people for how they want to choose who they support. I do note I'm very proud of my over 50 elected official endorsements, many of them from the district. They actually live in a district, from school board members to council members. And I do have statewide elected officials as well, such as Controller John Chung and Insurance Commissioner Dave Jones, as well as a number of Congress members like Congresswoman Karen Bass and Maxine Waters and Alan Lowenthal.
Okay, so much for that kind of campaign talk. What about being a congressman from this part of the world? What would you hope to accomplish in Washington as a freshman with no seniority, just starting off?
So, Warren, I thank you for asking that question. Let me explain that by taking you down memory lane to about 5 years ago or so, when California was facing many of the same issues that America is facing today. We were in deep political gridlock. We had a budget deficit of over $40 billion, and we were on the verge of a government shutdown. But we didn't do that. I was on the Speaker's leadership team. We came together, made some very difficult choices, stabilized the state of California, and provided a foundation from which to grow. Now we've turned a $40 billion deficit to an over $2 billion surplus. We've increased funding to education. And last month, as a result of a bill I authored, over $3 million in climate change grants were given to organizations like Heal the Bay and cities like L.A. and Hermosa Beach. And that's the kind of experience and leadership that I intend to bring to Congress.
So you're taking credit then for what's happened in California economically, but the governor and the legislature presumably had something to do with that too. The other members of the legislature, I should say.
Absolutely. This was a team effort with all 120 members of the legislature working with the governor, and we were able to turn the state around.
What about further efforts to deal with the environment when you get to Washington? That, of course, was a hallmark for Congressman Waxman.
Same for me as well. I'm honored to have 100% rating from the California League of Conservation Voters. And last year, I was one of three legislators out of 120 that scored the highest on the Sierra Club scorecard. The other two legislators were from Northern California. So the environment is extremely important to me personally and also to my constituents, which I've represented for many years, and it's a coastal district, as you know.
What would you hope to bring back from Washington to the district that you would serve if you were elected?
I'd like to bring back increased funding for research. We have UCLA in our district. We also have a lot of arts programs. If we could increase funding to the arts, that would be terrific. But mostly, if we could try to solve some of this political gridlock that we're having in our nation's capital. And I've been able to work across the aisle and pass significant pieces of complex legislation that has bipartisan support. And for example, I passed the California Subprime Mortgage Reform Act that reformed some of the most abusive practices in our lending industry that caused a financial meltdown in California. that was signed by a Republican governor, and that's the kind of experience that I can bring.
On the other hand, since you've been at Sacramento, the Democrats have been in control, and so far, at the moment, they are in complete control with the two-thirds majorities in both houses. The Republicans don't have anything to say whatsoever. When you go to Washington, it's very likely the Republicans are still going to be in control, perhaps even more so than they are now. Are you going to be able to learn to work under those circumstances?
Yes, because that's what I did 5 years ago, working with other legislators when the minority party had the ability to block virtually everything that we wanted to do. We were able to work through that, and we put constituents ahead of politics, and we turned California around.
Okay, so how difficult a race do you think this will be? There are going to be a lot of people in the race besides you and Wendy Gruhl. There are going to be Republicans, there are going to be independents, and a Republican did very well against Henry Waxman the last time Waxman ran.
It was Bill Bloomfield. He was actually an independent. He did do well, but he didn't win because this is a Democratic district. As you noted earlier, the Democratic registration is very high. I'm honored to have won the Democratic endorsement caucus this past weekend, and that means I'll be the official endorsed candidate of the Democratic Party after the March convention. And I think that will carry a lot of weight as this race goes on.
All right, Ted Lieu, again, California State Senator, running for Henry Waxman's seat in Congress, the 33rd Congressional District. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you, Warren.
Our next guest wasn't allowed to hear Senator Lieu, so she wouldn't have an advantage. She is Wendy Gruhl, former L.A. City Controller who lost last year's race for mayor of Los Angeles. She's been an official at DreamWorks, and she represented much of the San Fernando Valley on the city council before serving two terms as controller. Wendy Gruhl, welcome back to our program.
Warren, great to be on your show again.
You decided not to run for Zeb Jaroslawski's seat on the County Board of Supervisors, an enormously powerful and influential position. Why did you decide that you did want to run for Congress?
Well, I believe that running for Congress, I can make the biggest difference for my community. I had it in my gut. You know, it was unexpected that an iconic Congress member like Henry Waxman, who had been a leader for 40 years, would retire. I was looking at other opportunities and beginning a different kind of career when he decided not to run for re-election. I had phone calls that were ringing off the hook, not only from this region, but from across the country, saying, you need to come back and serve. And so this is a challenge that I think is really important, because when we listen to the president and he challenged the country to address the fact that only, you know, women only still earn 77 cents for every dollar a man makes. I heard the call on the issues of environment and so many other things of traffic, and I felt the responsibility to stand up.
Well, now, quickly, the Board of Supervisors are enormously important. They are both executive and legislative officers. They serve more people than some U.S. senators. In the Congress, you'll be a freshman member, and very likely, the great likelihood is that the Republicans will still be in the majority. You'll be just one out of 435.
Well, you know, it's an honor and a privilege to, I think, serve in the Congress. And the supervisor's race and the supervisor's position is very important. But as I've said my entire career, I'm not just running to be an elected official. I'm running where I believe I can make the most difference and the skills that I have to be able to do that. I think with all of my experience from being controller to working during the Clinton administration at HUD and response for the 94 earthquake and serving this region, that I have a lot to offer. Being one of the leaders on transportation and getting Measure R passed and making sure we have the resources necessary and continuing the legacy of a fighter. When you're in Congress and you are, you know, in a large group, you have to be able to have a few sharp elbows, be able to stand up and, you know, demand for your community. I believe that this is my opportunity to do that for this region.
This is thought to be a Democratic district, although nothing is ever certain in that regard. We just talked with Senator Lieu, who pointed out that he lives in Torrance, which is right in the middle of the district. You live out in the valley. You've had to move in order to be in the district itself, although that's not legally necessary. But a very small amount of the district actually includes the valley. The rest of it's over on the other side.
Well, I think 2 points. One, I just literally live within a mile of the district, and I represented a large portion of this district as the city controller. And in fact, where I live is closer to many of these areas than Torrance would be. But I think that's beside the point. The most important point is what we need in Congress is someone who's going to fight for the issue of our environment and protecting our beaches and our air and making sure that we preserve open space, which is something I did as a city council member, and make sure that we have someone who's going to bring the dollars to this region and address the issues on transportation and housing and our veterans.
You mentioned gender. How important is it that you're a woman?
Well, I think it is for me, when we only have 18% of the congressional women in the House, that more women is important. You look at the budget crisis, the government shutdown. Who were the people who actually brought the Congress together, Republicans and Democrats, to solve that? It was the women. So, you know, I think it is important to have my voice, but it is also important to have the skills that I have and the experience that I have on the issues that these residents in this community and that I feel are very strong, which is education, health care, it's about traffic, and it's about the environment.
Back to party affiliation. Recently in the San Fernando Valley in Van Nuys, a group of 80 Los Angeles area Democratic activists met. They overwhelmingly supported Senator Liu with 70% of their votes. That probably means that he will get the Democratic Party endorsement in this race, or does it? Are you going to fight him for it?
Well, look, I fight for every single vote that I possibly can. The vote that occurred last week was within literally a week of the congressman deciding not to run. And if you are a state elected official, it is stacked in your favor because many of the appointments are actually made by state legislators. I'm going after every single vote in this district. There are hundreds of thousands of people that are going to be voting, and I have some extraordinary Democrats that have supported me. First and foremost, Kamala Harris, who is our Attorney General. Emily's List has come on board, and I could list numerous ones that have endorsed me. There'll be Democrats on both sides. That's what this process is about. But I'm proud of my record, proud of getting support in the past of the Democratic Party, and we'll continue to fight to get those votes.
Okay, Wendy Gruhl, again, a former Los Angeles City Controller, candidate for mayor of Los Angeles, now running for the 33rd Congressional District to replace Henry Waxman. Thank you very much for being on our program.
Warren, I'm excited about this campaign and being the next Congress member from the 33rd District. Thank you.
Okay. We'll talk with other candidates for the 33rd Congressional District, including Republicans and independents, as time goes on. Remember that the parties no longer hold separate primaries in California. If nobody wins a majority in June, the top two vote-getters will face off in November, even if they're from the same party.
This podcast is produced by KCRW, a nonprofit public radio station based in Los Angeles. We rely on listeners like you. Support the podcasts you love by becoming a member. Go to kcrw.com/join.
Warren Olney back with Which Way LA. California's population will hit a benchmark next month. It's the result of major changes in demographics just since the year 2000. Back then, 46% were white, 32% were Latinos. Now, both groups are about 40%, with Hispanics about to become the largest race or ethnic group in California. KCRW's Saul Gonzalez has been catching up with the numbers.
Warren. And yes, we are finally crossing this long-expected Rubicon. We're crossing the river. And the exact numbers will be this. 39% of our population will be Latino-Hispanic. 38.8% will be non-Hispanic whites. Compare that to 25 years ago, Warren. 57% Anglo, 26% Latino. This culminates just, you know, years of growth in the Latino community. It was particularly supercharged in the 1980s. It slowed down, but the momentum continues.
How did they come about this date? How did they decide on it?
Well, there's a gentleman, there's the California Office of Finance that really crunches these numbers, and a guy there by the name of William Schooling who looks at the information, births and, you know, the birth rate in particular here in California. They crunch the numbers and have come up with March. Now, it won't be one magical day. There won't be an infant born in a hospital in Merced or Fresno or here in L.A. and we'll say, aha, we've arrived. But they can say with great confidence that in March this will happen at some point in that month. And, you know, I think it has significant both concrete implications and the symbolism of it certainly is great as well.
Here is William Schooling, the man you talked with.
The actual date's a little bit later than we anticipated as recently as a year ago. And that's because the birth rates, especially for Latinos, has been dropping to the point where they're just barely above replacement level fertility.
But enough to become a majority, or not a majority, but become a plurality.
The largest ethnic or racial group in California. Right. And it's about, to be exact, it's about 6-7 months later than they expected. And that's because, again, the birth rate is steadily dropping in the Latino community. And we've had a fall off in immigration. You know, a lot of this growth is from within California. It's not people crossing the border.
Manuel Pastor is with us. He's a professor of American Studies and Ethnicity at USC, a man who has been a student of the demographics of California for many, many years. And, Professor, it's always good to talk with you. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you as well.
How important is this?
Well, I think it's pretty significant politically, economically, educationally. Politically, because when the demographics change, politics often follows. And it's clear that in the state of California, the Latino caucus, for example, in the state assembly and state senate, is really the swing constituency in terms of moving politics in the state at this point. You know, economically, because this is really where the future of the state is as well. One of the things masked by simply looking at the numbers is the difference in the age distribution. The median age, half older, half younger, for non-Hispanic whites in the state is 45. The median age for Latinos is 27. That means that it's that younger population that's actually also going to be the future of the state in terms of its workforce, in terms of its voters, in terms of driving its educational system as well.
We just heard that the birth rate for Hispanics has dropped considerably now, just as roughly around the replacement level. So does that suggest that perhaps there will be less change than there might be given that median age of 27?
Well, it's true that the birth rate in for Latinos is dropping much closer to the replacement rate. The birth rate for non-Hispanic whites is below the replacement rate. But the other thing is to take a look at the current, you know, just given what the past is and given that difference between 45 and 27. 27, you're talking about a group that's in prime family formation age. 45, generally considered a little bit past prime family formation age. So, for example, 17% of non-Hispanic whites are below the age of 18, but 34% of Latinos are below the age of 18. So while we've just crossed this threshold, we're going to continue to move forward as this group gets older and another group also gets older but gets closer to the age in which they leave the earth.
So, Manuel Pastor, then, an aging population with a lot of younger people coming along, how important then is education?
Well, education is really critical. We know that there's significant educational differences between Latinos and non-Hispanic whites, both for the adult population. Some of that's a reflection of immigrants who come with less education, but also the dropout rate for Latinos in California is about twice what it is for non-Hispanic whites. The rate of going to college is far less than half of what it is for non-Hispanic whites. So we're really going to need to deal with the educational profile of this population in order to have a more productive future for the entire state. Currently, 18% of non-Hispanic whites are above the age of 65. Only 5% of Latinos are above the age of 65. We've got our older population is much whiter than our younger population. And part of what's been going on in the state is a generational disconnect between the old and the young. And some of that's been reflected in our priorities with regard to investments in things like education.
If I could just share a quick anecdote. I was having lunch earlier today, Warren, and this is how it plays out in a very small way, very tangible way. Having lunch here in West LA, outside, seeing younger Latinos taking care of older Anglos. I mean, nurses or caregivers or what have you, with, I would imagine, more upscale, upper middle class whites. And I think that's a portrait in miniature of what's happening in this state.
Is there, Manuel Pastor, likely to be some resentment on the part of young Hispanics because of this?
You know, one of the things that's quite interesting is that we're really seeing a great deal of optimism on the part of young Latinos. Both young Latinos and young African Americans poll more optimistically than non-Hispanic whites of their similar age group, and certainly than older folks as well. They really see the potential in the future. A lot of the data would suggest they should perhaps be a little bit more pessimistic, but they're quite optimistic. And I think we need to build an optimism, and we need to be able to make the generational connection that is obvious here because of the care giving strategies that Saul is talking about. You know, this is also one thing that's really important to realize. I mean, I'm kind of optimistic about this. We're talking about a population that does have pretty high rates of attachment to the labor force, does have pretty high rates of business startup, has actually, when you look at the polling data, Latinos have more propensity to vote for measures that save the environment than non-Hispanic whites in the state. So for a state that's long valued the environment, dealing with issues like climate, this burgeoning Latino population is actually an optimistic sign that we'll pay more attention to those issues.
That's very interesting. You mentioned that the Latino caucus in Sacramento has become sort of a swing constituency, but aside from the differences that you mentioned, generally speaking, people in this state pretty much all want the same thing, don't they? They want a better state for their children and the opportunity for economic advancement.
Yeah, I think what people want is for their children to be educated, their neighborhoods to be safe, the economy to be vibrant, and the opportunity to buy a house to be there. I think the one thing that is different is that a significant share of the California Latino population is immigrant, about 40%. Of that, about a third are undocumented. And those undocumented are not really separate from the rest of the Latino population. They live in the same households, they live in the same communities, live in the same neighborhoods. And in fact, in the state of California, a little bit under one-sixth of our children have at least one undocumented parent. So these issues of immigration, these issues of treating immigrants with more care and more respect are very, very important to the Latino population. They're sort of a litmus test for a lot of politicians. But when you go below that litmus test, yes, it's the concerns around education, the economy, the environment, and safety that motivate Latinos.
I should also say, Warren, that, you know, when we officially cross this this line in the sand where Latinos do become the largest ethnic or racial group in California, I imagine that also feeds a certain conversation that at times can get ugly about a changing America and what we are as a nation, as a state. And I'm sure in March we'll be hearing more of that.
Okay, major moment in the history of California. We won't be able to mark it by a particular birth or a
there will be
or
no
have a
one,
celebration, but
there will be no one
happen.
Crying baby that
no,
will mark it. I'm sorry.
Right. That's right. But it'll happen, and we're all looking forward to that. Thank you both. Manuel Pastor, Professor of American Studies and Ethnicity at USC, and Saul Gonzalez, of course, with KCRW here in the studio with me.
Thank you, Warren.
Thank you.